And welcome to South Sudan in Focus on The Voice of America. I'm your host, John Tanza, coming to you live from Washington. Here are some of the top stories making news across South Sudan and the rest of Africa this Thursday, November 14, 2024. The government of South Sudan says rich countries should contribute $100 billion for fighting climate change in the country.
Yeah, it's dubbed as a finance COP, because all the COPs that we've been attending, we used to have a problem of finance or the means of it.
And domestic violence stands deadly in Eastern Equatorial State. We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. South Sudan's Undersecretary in the Ministry of Environment and Forestry, who is attending the COP29 meeting in Baku, Azerbaijan, says his country needs money from developed nations for climate mitigation and adaptation. Africano Batel urged wealthy nations to follow through on their commitments and pledges made at COP29 meeting in Dubai last year.
Yeah, it's dubbed as a finance COP, because all the COPs that we have been attending, we used to have a problem of finance or the means of implementation. Countries like ours have come up with climate strategies known as NDCs, NAPAs, and NAPs, and those are all costed. Like for South Sudan, we need $100 billion up to 2050. So for us to be able now to implement projects to enable us to adapt and mitigate the impacts of climate change.
What are some of the projects in South Sudan that you will use this money for mitigating the effects of climate change?
Yeah, we have two things that we like to do, mitigation and adaptation. On mitigation, as South Sudan is an energy poor country, we don't have power. So we'd like to generate at least 3,000 megawatts of power from hydro, solar, wind, geothermal, natural gas. So, you know, hydro alone, for us to be able to develop our hydro power from Fula, it might need around $3 to $4 billion. So that's something that we'd like to look from our mitigation. And also in mitigation, because 99% of our population are using fuel wood, charcoal, and it's putting a lot of pressures in our forest, we like to plant 100 million trees. We have started without even the funding from these vertical climate funds. Then in adaptation, you know, agriculture is our backbone. With the impacts of climate change, we like now to invest more in smart agriculture, mechanized irrigated agriculture, because we don't have surety that rains will be as regular because they are now haphazard. So we like to go to smart agriculture and use the River Nile to do irrigation all year long. We need to make sure that now we can cultivate, and we should not only depend on rain. In smart agriculture, we have to start thinking of short rotation crops that are resistant to pests and diseases. So those are some of the things that we would like to be doing. And also now building the resilience of our people in areas that are affected with floods. So all these projects need a lot of money. That's why in COP29, we are negotiating a new collective quantified goal for finance. And the quantum that we'd like to do, because 100 billion that was promised is not enough. Now the new quantum that we need, the rich countries with high emissions like the US and the rest, to raise is 5 trillion dollars a year. So we think that this is something that we are negotiating here, and we hope the COP in Azerbaijan in Baku will come up with this. So this is one of the major things.
Yes, Undersecretary Africano Battelle, you've talked about the South Sudan's plans for the future. The elephant in the room is the oil fields. The hazards have been reported in the oil fields for many years. The companies involved in extracting oil have been tight-lipped. The government of South Sudan has been tight-lipped. I thought you were going to talk about how to improve the living conditions of people who are in oil-producing states.
We are in two wavelengths now. Now we are talking about climate change, which is a result of emissions, global emissions. And now you are coming to the issue of the pollution in the oil fields. I will address that to you now. I would like to bring you to speed that an environmental audit was carried by three firms, DPOC, GPOC, and SPOC. And these firms have already completed the assessment, the audit. So we are expecting the final reports to be handed to us in the Ministry of Environment. We are going to review those audit reports, the lab tests, and the conclusions that they have come out with, and the recommendations. So we'll also go and do some ground truthing on those reports. So a third party plus us will review it. Then we'll know the extent of the pollution. So what is going to happen if we prove that these oil companies have actually polluted, degraded our environment in the oil fields, that has impacted the livelihoods of our people, giving women birth, kids, deformed kids and all that? We are going to hold them accountable to remediate, to compensate everybody that has been impacted. So we are in the process. Apologies. The government is there.
Apologies for interjecting here. I've seen pictures from the oil fields, and these are not just pictures sent by random people. These are activists sharing pictures of pools of oil in areas where people are living, and even the drinking water in those areas are contaminated. And you are telling me you are yet to see the results of the assessment. It appears like the government is sitting discussing how to put off the fire instead of sending firefighters to put it off.
We are not trying to minimize the pollution that is happening. We have to be scientific. Okay. Now, samples, water samples, blood samples, okay, soil samples, air samples have been taken, tested. The results are out. So when we get these results, that's going to be basis for our conclusions.
That's Africano Battelle, Undersecretary in the Ministry of Environment and Forestry. He spoke to me from Baku, Azerbaijan, attending the COP29 meeting. Warmer weather and unpredictable rain patterns caused by climate change are affecting communities all over Africa. Reporter Ruben Chama speaks with people in Nairobi about climate change as world leaders debate the way forward at COP29 summit. Some climate scientists say emission from burning coal, oil and gas in developed countries have led to warming the earth. Timothy Lapierre is a member of the pastoralist Maasai community. He says climate change is reducing the water and grass available for their livestock and traditional ways of life.
If you look at the pastoral community, due to the shrinking landscapes caused by drying up of rivers, the farmer communities are doing a lot of cultivation along the rivers, and therefore there is no water downstream. The water does not reach the pastoral communities in those sides due to the heavy commercial crop production in the upper regions, and therefore this has affected and reduced the number of stock that a pastoralist could keep. And this has really driven people to poverty. Our government should do something about it. There should be legislations in place to protect the pastoral landscape. To prevent further fragmentation and subdivision of land into plots, the government should set certain area as reserve lands for pastoral community, as either pasture land, so that that area cannot be subdivided, nobody can settle it, and that way we will have empowered pastoral communities.
Virginia Kingo is a socialist. Psychologist rather in Nairobi, and she sees the effect of climate change among many communities. She thinks the government should help communities by investing more in weather forecasting.
Yeah. Initially, the community would predict the weather, like where the short rains between November and December, the long rains between March and May, and the rest time of the year was dry. The farmers knew what to plant and when. Right now, the weather has become so unpredictable and is affecting most community members. We have experienced longer and more frequent dry periods, which have led to food insecurity, loss of livestock, depletion of water, increase of arid and semi-arid areas, and also clashes between the pastoral community for pasture. We have also seen swarms of locusts destroy drought-resistant crops and trees. Due to climatic change, the rainfall patterns have also changed. We have seen short and intense rains, which are catastrophic. They have led to loss of lives, displacement, and landslides.
Yakim Santimo Kararum manages community group in Laikipia County. He says some of the Ma-speaking pastoralists are struggling to adapt to changing weather.
There's also lots of land degradation. Right now in Mayanath, we are doing the restoration. We have a number of invasive species that have come up after the rains came back. So we find that these climatic changes, they are affecting the community. As a community, I have also started to change the way of life, something that is very foreign to us, for example, growing crops. We are also being faced still with a challenge on those crops that we are growing because of the elephants. We have elephants roaming around the homesteads. This is really affecting the Ma community at large. We are very optimistic that this COP29 is going to do something, probably fund communities, direct funding that should be coming direct to the communities. It's my hope that this COP29, they are going to give some good solutions to African countries.
We'll have more reporting in the coming days on the COP29 summit and how African nations are battling climate change on all our programs and on voaafrica.com. You are listening to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. Coming up, domestic violence goes deadly in Eastern Equatorial State. Find out what happened after the break.
Hello, listener of South Sudan in Focus. We have an exciting new segment dubbed Words of Wisdom. We want to hear your thoughtful proverbs that echo through your community. This is another chance for you to share wisdom from your roots. All you need to do is record a proverb in a language of your choice, tell us its English translation and what it means. Keep it brief, authentic, and represent your community. Your recorded proverb shall be sampled on South Sudan in Focus every Wednesday. Send your recording via our WhatsApp number, +1 202 630 8011. That is +1 202 630 8011.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Domestic violence claimed lives of a couple in Nakicho Boomer in Kapoita, South County of Eastern Equatorial State. The couple had a dispute over bail money that turned deadly, leaving the couple dead. Eyewitnesses say a woman hacked her husband to death, and the relatives of the man later killed the woman. Kaltuma Vanessa has more for VOA from Torit.
Eyewitness in Kapoita South Nyakichoki Boma says the deceased couple fought over money from a cattle sale to pay for the bail of the man who was in prison in Torit. Neighbors alleged that the wife opposed the idea of using money from the cattle sale for her brother-in-law's bail. She reportedly picked up a machete and slashed her husband to death. Anthony Lariot, the Boma chief of Nakicho, confirms the couple's argument escalated over bail money, which led to a double homicide.
The brother of the deceased was arrested and is in Torit prison. He was arrested during the crackdown, and so they are demanding money so that the man is bailed. The message was delivered by someone who came from Torit. Therefore, the husband to this woman wanted to sell out the cow, but the woman was not happy about it, and thought the man just wanted to misuse the money, so there was an argument between the two because of the money. The woman was demanding money from the husband, and by then it was getting late. To avoid the argument, the man went to his mother's house to smoke tobacco. The woman pulled the panga and followed him there and waited for him, and when he came out of the house, the woman cut him on the neck, and when he fell down, she continued cutting him on the head several times and tried to escape, but people caught her. I also went there after hearing the news, and the following morning, the sisters to the man came and took the woman by force. We tried to plead with them, but they refused that. They do not want the government to intervene, and so they took and hung her.
Lucy Namachi, a member of parliament in Kapoita South County, witnessed the woman being hanged by members of the community in Nakicho village. She condemned the violence and stressed the authorities must intervene in such cases and put a stop to revenge killings.
For sure, this issue happened when I was there. It's not okay because a woman fought with her husband, and this woman killed her husband. When her husband died, the relatives of her husband were supposed to take care of this wife and the children, but they also killed this woman. I tried to talk, but they also want to beat me. From there, I kept and watched the drama until the woman was hanged. I left the scene. If such things are happening in the community, it's not good. There's a government that can handle such issues. Let the community not take law into their hands. The chief is part of the government, and community should listen to him.
Kapoita South County Police Inspector Moses Matia condemns all mob justice. Matia says state government should deploy security forces in remote parts of Eastern Equatorial State to prevent revenge killings.
The place is very far from police station because the police are here in town, and these people are up to the bomber. There is a station there, but police officers are not deployed. The only place with police is this side of Matio and Naknak. Nakicho is too far from Namurunya. The most important thing is to hear from the chief if these people have been apprehended. The places we are talking about, they are too far, which need transport. If they were nearby places, we would have reached in time.
Lawmaker Namachi is calling on state and national government officials to help disseminate information about law and justice, and emphasized that crimes including murder should be handled by the law enforcement. For VOA News, I'm Kaltuma Vanessa reporting from Eastern Equatorial Capital, Torit.
Donald Trump may be moving into the White House until January, but he is laying the groundwork and making plans for his domestic policy of the next 4 years. VOA's senior Washington correspondent Caroline Presutti has our story.
Victory speech, election night, 2024.
We're going to fix everything about our country. And we made history for a reason tonight, and the reason is going to be just that.
President-elect Donald Trump's first priority is to fix immigration.
We're going to have to seal up those borders, and we're going to have to let people come into our country. We want people to come back in, but we have to let them come back in, but they have to come in legally.
Trump won over campaign crowds by vowing mass deportations, targeting millions of undocumented immigrants each year. Experts say this would cost billions of dollars and require massive organization and delegation, none of which has been detailed yet. But Trump's border czar pick, Tom Homan, told 60 Minutes he would focus on workplaces, not neighborhoods. The second priority is to fix inflation. Vice President-elect J.D. Vance also on election night.
And after the greatest political comeback in American history, we're going to lead the greatest economic comeback in American history under Donald Trump's leadership.
Trump pledges America First policies with tariffs on foreign goods and no tax on Social Security benefits or tips. The third priority, to fix the government.
America has given us an unprecedented and powerful mandate.
With that mandate, he appointed Tesla and SpaceX owner Elon Musk and former presidential rival Vivek Ramaswamy to head up government efficiency and look at bureaucracy and spending. Having a Republican-controlled Senate and House of Representatives will assure a smooth confirmation for those already tapped for the Secretaries of State, Defense and Homeland Security, Environmental Protection Agency head, United Nations and Israel ambassadors, and more. Just a few of the 4,000 government positions to be filled by Donald Trump. In less than 70 days, the president-elect takes over, and we will get a better picture of his second administration. But one thing is definite, it will be starkly different from the Biden years. Carolyn Presutti, VOA News, West Palm Beach, Florida.
The U.S. ambassador to Kenya, Meg Whitman, resigned Wednesday, 1 week after Donald Trump's re-election. In a statement, Ambassador Whitman touted some of her achievements to include various trade, health and security arrangements that Kenya signed with the United States, including Kenya's elevation as the first major non-NATO ally in Africa. Barack Oduor is a political reporter with the People's Daily of Kenya. He tells James Batty that Ambassador Whitman's resignation met a mixed reception on various Kenyan social media platforms for her good work, but also what some Kenyans saw as her failure to criticize President Ruto's government during the June anti-tax protests.
Kenyans in online platforms, especially Facebook and other social media sites, welcomed her resignation, saying that it was timely and a matter that she ought to have done, not even now, or she ought to have done that in the past. Remember, the ambassador has been facing a lot of backlash, or I'll call it criticism, from a section of Kenyans who feel that she has been cozying up or she has been friendly to President William Ruto's administration, that has been accused of abetting a lot of ills to Kenyans, especially torture, abductions and disappearance of Kenyans who are criticizing its government.
I'm reading the statement she put out where she highlights some of her achievements, including various trade, health and security deals that she said Kenya signed with the United States, such as the elevation of Kenya as its first major non-NATO ally in sub-Saharan Africa. Are Kenyans taking note of her achievements also?
Yes, thank you very much. I've said that it has received mixed reactions. Remember that looking at all the ambassadors who have represented the United States of America to Kenya, it could be said historically that she's one of the first ambassadors to have done a lot of immense work for Kenya as a country, because the short period she has been ambassador, she has done much. We've seen a lot of serious trade agreements Kenya has made with the U.S. because of her. But remember also, she made it possible for Kenyan President William Ruto to be hosted recently at the White House, where Kenya signed a lot of agreements, including military agreements. Also that she has been lobbying for American investors to come and invest in Kenya as a country. She has been hosted by several governors in Kenya, especially governors who are seeking to have investors from America invest in their counties or in their regional bloc. I would say that she has left a very rich legacy that is likely to be missed. She has been hailed by a section of Kenyans as an ambassador whose contribution is going to be missed because of her contribution, her focus, and her determination to see Kenya change into a better country in coming years.
Could it be that this resignation is in anticipation of the political shift in Washington?
Definitely, that's true. We know that ambassadorial appointments are usually political appointments in whichever country you want to place your focus on. So it is thought that her resignation has something to do with the change in leadership in Washington, but also the relationship that countries like Kenya will be having moving forward with the U.S. now that President Donald Trump has been elected.
That's Barack Odor, a political reporter with the People's Daily of Kenya. He was speaking with my colleague James Batty earlier today. That's all we prepared for you this Thursday, November 14, 2024. We now leave you with the Sauti Sol and the song Nambi. We've been listening to Sauti Sol and the song Nambe. For more information on our programs, visit www.voaafrica.com. I'm your host, John Tanza, on this live broadcast from Studio 14 here in Washington. On behalf of our producer, Kwame Ofori, and engineer, Killa Williams, we wish you a lovely evening. Remember to join us again tomorrow evening for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.
She be.